held last month at King's Place in London. It's introduced by Loba Kotari and Jamila Siddiqui.
Well, Jamila and I are sitting once more on the banks of the Regent's Park Canal that goes into the Grand Union Canal all the way up to Birmingham. But of course, the artists at this year's festival come from much further afield than that, don't they, Jamila?
From much further afield, and it's wonderful that it does. Darbar has got to be the high point of my musical calendar. It's only been going 6 years. This is the sixth Darbar, but it feels like a very long-established, long-running festival of Indian music, certainly the largest of its kind, definitely the biggest in Western Europe. There is noticeably, this time, a larger presence of younger generation musicians, people that we wouldn't necessarily know, but we would have known their parents or their uncles. So the legacy seems to continue, but pedigree still seems to be very important.
Well, that's it. It does seem to be a stepping stone for a newer generation, but Indian classical music is extraordinary, because you wouldn't expect to see any of these younger people playing on stage before the age of 40.
Absolutely. It would have been unthinkable 50 years ago, but I think things are changing. I think people are expecting to flap their wings earlier and go solo. But I find myself being very grateful to Darbar, because these are not only people I would never have heard, these are people I would never have heard of. So it's like the Darbar organizers do all the legwork, do the research, handpick the musicians and put them on our doorstep. It really doesn't get better than that.
And Alam Khan is one of those artists being put on our doorstep at this Darbar.
I am really looking forward to Alam Khan, the son of the great Sarod legend, Ustad Ali Akbar Khan Saab. Yehudi Menuhin called him the greatest musician of the 20th century. So I'm very much looking forward to Alam Khan, his son, playing the same instrument.
Well, later on in the program, we're going to be hearing from another one of those young artists, a vocalist, Aarti Ankalikar Tikekar, who's said to be one of the rising stars of her generation. But first, here's Alam Khan, representing that legacy you talked about, Jamila, on sarod, accompanied by Anubratha Chatterjee on tabla and Debi Priya Sirkar on tanpura.
Thank you.
Music from Alam Khan on Sarod, accompanied by Devipriya Sirkar on Tanpura. Alam, I have to say, watching you perform, you're very serene and peaceful when you play. It's a great joy to watch.
That's good that it looks like that.
Inside there's anxiety and
storm.
Storm running. And Alam, are you very conscious when you play of emulating the sort of old traditional way of playing to a certain extent, or can you hear that kind of your California Beach Boy influence coming into perhaps the way you phrase or the, you know, the nature in which you play?
Well, I grew up listening to rock and roll music, to hip hop music, to Jimi Hendrix, to all that kind of stuff. I mean, I love that kind of stuff. My mother was an old hippie pretty much. So it's like I listened to all those things. And that's probably why my father loved her so much, as she was just so free and open and honest and just loving. So my father let me do whatever I wanted. You know, he's way old school and my mother's very young. So they balanced out, and I don't think there's many families like ours. It's quite unique. But I don't really think that comes across in the playing. I used to make other music and stuff like that, but I always kept the classical separate from the other kinds of music. So for me, I'm still finding myself definitely in how I play. You know, I play like my father and his phrasing and what I love about the music. I try to play that, emulate that, but I also, there are things about the way I perform and things like that that maybe are my own way of presenting it. I'm not someone that fixes things beforehand, so everything I play is improvised. Of course, it's improvised within the raga structure, but I only know the guts. Sometimes I don't even fix which gut or theme, you can call it. I don't fix it beforehand sometimes also. Everything's improvised. The music is supposed to be about, it's on the spot, it's sporadic, it's spontaneous. Sometimes it works beautifully, sometimes it crashes. But if you can make it, the crash, a beautiful crash, you know, that's the thing, you know. Yeah. Life's not perfect, but the ride,
fabulous roller coaster.
The ride is supposed to be, yeah. I mean, that's the way I learned. Of course, we learn compositions, supposed to memorize that and all. But I don't bring that to the stage usually. I just play. But the love in the notes is the main thing. Each note you should be expressing that kind of love and whatnot. And I am just now starting to play with other kinds of music too on the sarod. So I just recorded the nephew of one of the Allman Brothers. His name is Derek Trucks. He's a very famous slide blues guitar player. He's close to my age. He loves my dad's music and would always try and come when he wasn't touring to see my father play. And I just played on his new album, and I'm hoping, with a very few select kind of people, to incorporate the sarod in a way, because I want more people to know the sarod instead of the sitar. I just want people to hear the sound of sarod. And if it's through other mediums, other music, as long as it's tasteful, then that's great. And I want it to steer people to hear my father's music and the future generations. So,
You were playing in the afternoon today. How do you go about picking a piece for an afternoon? Because it's not a common time of day.
Yeah, it's nap time for most Indians. You eat your rice and your curry and dal, and then you take a nap. So no, I mean, I'm joking, but you can either ignore the fact that the melodies are based around the times of day and the energy, or the melodic phrasing is such that it will complement you in that time of day, make you feel better. Just like you wouldn't wake up and have necessarily a cheeseburger for breakfast, you'd probably have eggs and toast or something like that. It's a silly comparison, but the ragas also, they have, the way that they were created was the microtones and all the things were designed in that way, so they would be morning ragas, afternoon and evening. So as a student, a performer, you have to practice for all times.
So Bimbalasi is one of those rags actually that allows you quite a large window in the day to be played, isn't it?
Well, it's usually a late afternoon raga, but since I'm the only afternoon performer, I figured I would play it. It's a bigger raga, too. You can do more things. Some of the other afternoon ragas are smaller and less to elaborate on. So I tried to play that. My father always said that this raga of Bimbalasri, when you play it correctly, it's the time of day when the sun is, you know, high in the sky, it's starting to set. It's not dusk, it's not twilight, it hasn't set yet, but it's the time of day where all the animals, you'll see if you play, all the animals will be walking around, and then you'll see tears in their eyes because they have to find a place to go for the night, they have to find a home, and they have to leave all their friends, and it's time to take refuge and cover of the night, and that's basically the feeling or sentiment that comes out in that raga. He would always say that, so it's more of a later afternoon, but sometimes we take some liberty in doing this stuff. And I know my father would have said, it's okay, just play, it's fine.
The afternoon rag Bim Palasi, performed there by Alam Khan on Sarod, one of the new generation, transfixing the audience here with his performance. Obviously, he's picked up so much more than wise words from his father, the legendary Ali Akbar Khan. He was accompanied by Anubrata Chatterjee on tabla and Debi Priya Sirkar on tanpura. Now, next, we have another of the new generation of classical artists, the vocalist Aarti Ankalikar Tikekar, talking to Jamila Siddiqui about the training that she had and the different styles of vocal music.
You know, these are different styles of singing. Agra is a style of singing. Gwalior is another style of singing. Jaipur is another style. So I have learned from, you know, these styles from different gurus. And I started very early, you know, when I was 8 or 9. So that's how.
So if you start that young, I guess everything else goes on as normal in the background, your school and your other education and all the other stuff, you know.
I did master's in commerce, so I think it became very easy. If you start that young, I think the grasping is good. And, you know, my dad was a real ringmaster. He was very, very strict, a disciplinarian. He would never let me sleep or eat without doing, you know, practicing for 4 or 5 hours every day.
And that's alongside your schoolwork and your homework?
Oh, yeah, of course. That was my mom's job, you know. My mom would never let me sleep without the homework. And my dad would make sure that I was doing my riyaz, my practice. So, you know, I was caught in between, so I had to do everything. But I enjoyed it, you know. I used to enjoy singing. It was fun because I thought that if I sang one piece 10 times, I could sing it really better than when I sang it the first time. But when I sang it 10 times, 50 times, 100 times, and it you know, I was doing better and better. And, you know, that used to really make me very happy.
Yes, I hope music students all over the world are listening to this. Practice makes perfect. Okay, for instance, you know, today is like the first day of the month of Chetty in India. And there's a whole body of songs related to the the Chetty family of songs. So what is the sentiment in that? Because I believe you might be singing some of that.
It is sung in the first month, you know, according to the Indian calendar, Chet is the first month. And, you know, the Chetty just describes nature in that month. So it says, Chaitmas bulaile koyaliya, the cuckoo singing. And also, there is a yearning, you know, she's waiting for a lover to come.
Now, you're also going to sing rag Jaunpuri. Can you tell us a bit about that rag?
Jaunpuri is a morning melody. And the bandish that I'm going to sing is in Taal Rupak, which has a 7-beat cycle. And the composition starts on the 6.5. You know,
right. Just count it aloud for us.
Ten, ten, na, ten, na, re, me, na. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Ten, ten, na, ten, na, re, me, na, janu, me, na, janu, re, me, na.
So it's a rhythm cycle of 7 beats.
Yes.
But the way
and the composition starts at the 6.5, you know.
Right.
So that's how it makes it more challenging.
And very pleasing.
To sing the alap. Yeah.
Very pleasing, that fraction, because you would mark the fraction instinctively almost.
Yes.
But I would need it shown to me, counted out.
Yeah. So 6.5 makes it interesting and challenging.
So how do you remember you've got another half
I think,
to make
you
up?
You know, once you start singing, then the taal is in the subconscious mind. It is no more, I don't need to count it at all.
So you have a morning slot at this year's Darbar Festival. Western singer would probably find it quite difficult to get the voice going.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, being more used to concerts being in the evening.
Yes.
So how do you adjust your voice for the morning?
I just love singing in the mornings. I just love the morning concerts because I think your mind is really so calm and, you know, I just enjoy it. And the voice part, I think we are trained to sing in the mornings because normally in India, Indian classical musician practices early in the morning, you know, like 4 and 5 in the morning. And our practice session goes, you know, we have 4 or 5 different sessions, like early in the morning, then, you know, I used to practice from 10 to 12, then a break, and again, you know, from 3 to 5, and then again, say, 7 to 8. So, it, you know, so that I could sing at any time, you know.
So let's hear Rag Jaunpuri with Aarti Ankalikar Tikekar, accompanied on tabla by Anubrata Chatterjee, with Chinmay Kothatka on the harmonium, and on tanpura, Priya Prakash and Shobhna Patel.
More than one,
That was Aarti Ankalekar Pitkekar on vocals, performing a rag called Janpuri, and she was accompanied by Chinmay Kolhatkar on harmonium, Anubrata Chatterjee on tabla, and on tanpuras, Priya Prakash and Shobna Patel. Next week, we have more from Darbar on World Roots when we hear from Pandit Ulhas Kashalkar, the Hindustani vocalist, and the Indian king of the saxophone, Kadri Gopalnath. So, till next week, we end with Achethi, a song that marks the first month of the Indian calendar. Here's Aarti Ankalekar Tikekar.
Chet mas bole ne koyaliya urama chet mas bole ne koyaliya chet mas bole ne koyaliya urama chet mas bole ne koyaliya jadu mas bole ne koyaliya urama more aganwa jadu mas bole ne koyaliya urama more aganwa jadu mas bole Tat more
Arati Ankalika Tikeka singing at last month's Darbar Festival of Indian Classical Music held at King's Place in London. World Roots was introduced by Lopa Kattari and Jamila Siddiqui. And as Lopa said, there'll be more from the festival at the same time next week.
This week's guest on Private Passions is one of Britain's favourite film and television directors. Mike Leigh's musical choices include Offenbach and Kurt Weill, a trio from Mozart's Così fan tutte, an extract from a rare Shostakovich film score, and songs by Gilbert and Sullivan.
The minute we start talking about Gilbert and Sullivan, the one thing I have to say immediately is that I've got no time for apologists or cynics about Gilbert and Sullivan. It's great. It's good fun. It's great music. It's incredibly well written. And when performed properly, that's to say not in a kind of awful camp and sort of superficial, embarrassing, mawkish way that some people may remember and associate with horrible schoolmasters or maiden aunts or something, it is actually a gas, and I love it.
Mike Lee's Private Passions, tomorrow at midday on BBC Radio 3.
That's 4 o'clock and time for Jazz Library. Here's Alan Shipton.
Welcome to the Playhouse Theatre in Cheltenham for the second of two special editions of Jazz Library from the Cheltenham Jazz Festival 2011. I'm very pleased to welcome as my guest for this programme a musician who I've admired for a very long time and absolutely think he's one of the greatest pianists in the world today. So please give a special Cheltenham welcome to John Taylor. Well, John, I was thinking before we started this broadcast, the first time I met you, which was when you were clambering out of the organ loft in Salisbury Cathedral for the John Sermon recording of Proverbs and Songs.
Yes, playing the organ, particularly an organ of that size and power, when I'm really just a piano player. And I'd never really had any idea about playing one. And John asked me to be involved in that project. It was that great chorus at Salisbury, that, you know, the choir that really, they were so enthusiastic. And there's a great feeling amongst everyone. And to know that I could put my feet and hands down on this huge machine and make such a noise. I mean, I played an electronic organ a little bit, as we'll hear.
We'll hear some later, yes.
But that was an amazing experience.
Well, I thought it was a good lead-in to the fact that the first piece of music we're going to hear is quite early on in your association with John. And I think, I mean, John Sermon's had a particularly important role in your life as a musician, I suspect.
Oh, indeed, yes, of course.
So this album, which was called How Many Clouds Can You See, came out originally as an LP in 1970. It's just come out again on CD. So what was the background to this, John?
I'd moved to London a few years previously and I'd settled with a gang of guys that were doing various different jobs. I was the only musician, but actually I had an office job, I must say that, and I was playing music in my spare time in the evenings. And at this period I went to the local pub, there was some mainstream or traditional jazz going on in Highgate, and I met Malcolm Griffiths, the trombonist, and we started talking and he said, oh, you must come and meet John Sermon. In fact, I met John and then I met everybody at the same time in this band that got together in King's Cross. And I met Alan Skidmore, Tony Oxley, Harry Miller, Mike Osborne. So wonderful to meet those guys. That was the beginning of my musical relationship and friendship with John. Yeah.
Now, the piece we're going to hear was actually written by John Warren. He was contributing quite a lot, I think, to work on the London scene at this time.
Yes, he was, and he had a big band which also comprised some of the people I just mentioned in it. And in the early 70s, we toured a bit with that band abroad in Germany and Holland, and that was really the first experience I'd had of touring with a group of musicians on the road for some weeks. But John's music, yeah, was very special, very sensitive man, loved Gil Evans, and in fact, this track you'll probably be able to recognise that influence.
Well, we'll hear John's composition, Premonition, from the album How Many Clouds Can You See?
Thank you.
part of Premonition from How Many Clouds Can You See? John Sermon's album on the Vocalion label, recorded in 1970 in a rather large personnel, which you can find on the Jazz Library website, for which I'll give you the address a bit later in the programme. But John, interesting that at that very early stage, I mean, the two things which I associate with your playing, one is being able to be part of an ensemble and blend seamlessly into that, and then to somehow emerge from that with a very clear solo voice, even though you were doing your sort of office job in the daytime, and you're fully formed, as it were, as the John Taylor we know, even at this stage.
I think at this stage I had chucked my job in. I was a free man. I suppose the style of that music and the way John had set that up, that particular composition and arrangement, was to allow me, as really the only soloist in it, that space to emerge with Tony Oxley on the drums and Bar Phillips on the bass, which was a combination that I don't think ever happened again. And of course there's such an electricity and tension involved in that, you can still hear it.
It's fantastic. And we're going from one Tony to another, the late lamented Tony Levin, who sadly died fairly recently, but he was the drummer on the first album, I think, which came out under your own name, which was called Pause and Think Again. So, actually, very fortunately for you, working with two very remarkable drummers on some of your earliest outings on record.
Yes, and very strong, powerful personalities, and both of them great and different and very special.
Now, for Pause and Think Again, you were working with a sextet that, as far as I can tell, worked pretty consistently on and off through the 1970s with Kenny Wheeler, with Chris Pine on trombone, with Dan Saltzman on alto, and particularly Chris Lawrence on bass, with whom you've had a very long working association. But this band was quite a regular unit for a while, wasn't it?
Yes. I mean, we were still playing in the early 80s, I believe. Well, probably middle 80s. I was originally asked by John Sermon to make this record, this Pause and Think Again, with Peter Eden, who was the producer. And John had said to me, JT, there's an opportunity for you to do something. Would you like to make a record? Would you like to make it with? And I chose that personnel because I'd had the opportunity to play with them in various small bands, and I'd met Kenny before, and Stan, I'd heard Stan play. So I had an idea of the sort of band I wanted. And I suppose, really, I loved the music at that time of Herbie Hancock's sextet, and I think that sort of combination of instruments was something I thought I could write for.
Well, let's hear the opening track from the album, which, unsurprisingly, is called Pause.
Thank you.
Kenny Wheeler in particularly fine form on Pause from Pause and Think Again. That was originally out on a Turtle LP, one of those labels I remember from the 70s, having a lot of interesting music. Now out on an FMR CD, and I think, John, it brings this music to the public once again.
Yes, and I agree that it's good to have it out there and people can hear Kenny like that in his prime and Tony sounding really fresh, beautiful sound on the kit.
It's a lovely album. I do commend the whole thing.